If you will, turn with me in your Bible to Luke chapter 12. We have been marching our way through the book of Luke. We find ourselves in Luke chapter 12 as we've been taking it verse by verse. And a couple of things that I want to remind you of. The last couple of weeks we've looked at Jesus talking. He pronounced some woes on the Pharisees and told the Pharisees that because of their hypocrisy, that they had alienated themselves from God, that they had turned their back on God because they required certain things of people, but then weren't even doing them themselves. And Jesus was very clear on letting us know through these stories that it's not about what you do for Jesus. It's not about what you do. It's not about weighing the good against the bad. It's about a relationship with God. And what the Pharisees had done is they had turned a precious relationship into a set of rules and regulations and things that they were trying to live by but couldn't live by and forcing other people to live by those. We also looked at Jesus and how he loves us deeply and dearly. He cares about the things that don't even really matter. He knows the hairs on your head, for example. We talked about sparrows and ravens and how God takes care of them. And if he's going to take care of them, isn't he going to take care of you, his child? We talked about how all these just his care and love for you. And as we move along this this chapter, chapter 12, which is turning into a long chapter, we get to, he's going to switch gears a little bit. But I want you to remember and recall his love and his care for you. And that is what is going to prompt him to talk about this next thing. Now, in chapter 12, we're going to start looking at people's favorite subject. If you go to church and you start asking people, what do you want to learn about? This is what everybody wants to learn about, and it's end time stuff. It's the future. When I was in student ministry, people, they always wanted to start in the book of Revelation. I would always say, hey, there's 65 books before the book of Revelation. And once you get the other 65 books pretty good, then you can go on to the book of Revelation. Okay, and honestly and truly, the way that they teach Revelation in seminary is I took the class Daniel Revelation, and we had to learn the book of Daniel before we could even touch the book of Revelation. Because if you don't know what's going on in the Old Testament, there's no way you're going to understand the book of Revelation. But anyway, I know I'm kind of going down this little rabbit trail that happens to me sometimes, but let's get back on point, okay? Look at what it says in Luke chapter 12, verse 35. It says, "Be dressed in readiness and keep your lamps lit." Okay? Now, just a little, again, we're going to be talking about future things. Okay? Now, one of the reasons that we talked about God's care for you, and we also talked about the detachment from possessions. Okay? The detachment from possessions. In other words, your life isn't just what you have. Your life is whose you are. Okay? And the reason that that comes in the first part of chapter 12 is because he wants us to be detached from our possessions. He wants us to be free from the cares of daily life. And it's important to have those in place in your life if you're going to be ready for the second coming of Christ. Okay? Because there's going to be some trouble and some trial and some tribulation and some tough times that come before Christ comes. Okay? Does that sound familiar? If you were to watch the news today, does it sound like maybe we're in some troubled times? So this is kind of an important thing. He's like, hey, you want to get ready for it. You want to keep your lamps lit. The idea there is at night, we turn on the lights so that we can see. He's like, hey, you might want to stay up a little bit late. Keep the lamp on because something is going to happen. And then he's going to give us three parables. And those three parables are going to talk about being ready. Okay, look at the first parable, starting in verse 36. Be like men who are waiting for their master when he returns from the wedding feast, so that they may immediately open the door to him before he comes and knocks. Blessed are those slaves whom the master will find on the alert when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will gird himself to serve and have them recline at the table, and he will come up and wait on them. Whenever he comes in the second watch or even the third watch and finds them, blessed are those slaves. Okay, so we got this parable, and it's a parable about a household, and this household has servants, or the Bible calls them slaves. Think about it like a butler or maybe some service people that work within the household. Okay, now the master, Bruce Wayne, has gone off, and he has gone off to a wedding feast. He's gone off to a party. And Alfred wants to be ready when Bruce comes home. Okay? Now, evidently Bruce can't get the key in the door. Okay? We don't know why. But in those days, they would go into the house at night, and they would put a bar over the door to lock it. Okay, so when someone came home, you couldn't just put a key in the door and turn the key and let yourself in. You had to knock on the door, and then someone would come and remove the bar. Now, I want you to think about this. You're the master of the home. How long do you want to knock on the door when you come home after you've been out late at night? Okay, do you want to knock like you're about to knock and the door opens for you? Or do you want to stand there for 5 minutes trying to wake somebody up? Okay, which master's going to be happy? The one who's about to knock and the door opens, right? Okay, now maybe this wedding feast is a long ways away, and you've walked a long ways to get home, and you finally get home and you're a little bit hungry, and you're the master. Do you want to like eat in an hour and a half? Or do you want to eat like right now? Okay? Raise your hand for right now. Okay? You don't even have to be a master. Sometimes when you're hot, you just, right now is better than an hour from now, right? You see what the parable is saying here? Look at that. In verse 36, the word there is immediately the door is open. Okay? Look at 37. Be on alert when he comes. He wants to recline at the table, and he wants to eat. Okay? And what is Jesus saying? Look at even further down. Blessed are those slaves in verse 38. Look at, they're ready, they're waiting to serve. Okay? Jesus is like, hey, be ready and waiting to serve. Your master is coming. Now, one of the things that I think dissuades us sometimes from the second coming of Christ and the bodily appearance of Christ, him actually showing up, is we have some great theology. And our theology says that he's everywhere all the time, right? But there is going to be a difference from God's omnipresence, his ability to be everywhere and to be with you right now, spiritually, and the bodily showing up of Jesus Christ. And the question that Jesus is going to ask is this: what will you be doing when Jesus shows up? Will you be doing something sinful? Or will you be doing something godly? Will you be sharing the gospel with somebody? Or will you be whatever? Are you with me? What do you want to be caught doing, in other words? Now, look at the emphasis here. Look in verse 38. It says, whether he comes in the second watch or even the third. The second watch is from 9 o'clock to midnight. The third watch is from midnight to 3 o'clock. In other words, hey, you guys might need to stay up late, and you might need to put in some extra effort to be ready for Jesus. Okay? That's the first parable. Pretty positive parable when you think about it. Just, hey, be ready for Jesus to come. Look at the second parable. The second parable starts in verse 39. Be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have allowed his house to be broken into. You too, be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour that you do not expect. Now, Jesus is going to take something negative, and he's going to show us something positive from it. Okay, now this makes a lot of, this doesn't take a whole, you don't need a preacher to explain this to you probably. Just think about it. Like, if you knew someone was going to break into your house, and you knew the time that they were going to break into your house, what would you do to be ready for them? You know, it doesn't cost a lot to hire a bodyguard for 1 hour. And if you knew when they were coming, you could hire a bodyguard for, but if you're going to hire a bodyguard or a house guard or whatever for like weeks and months, that's going to be pretty expensive. He's like, hey, if you knew when he was coming, you would be ready. But because you don't know, you're not ready. In other words, always be ready. Okay, you see that in verse 39? And actually, verse 40, you too, be ready. The Son of Man is coming in an hour you don't expect. We don't know when Jesus is going to come back. What will you be doing when he shows up? Now, remember, it's not like he's going to knock on the door and give you some time to prepare to open it when he comes in. Remember that when he, after the resurrection, he showed up in the midst of them. They're in this room. The door is locked. All this, and all of a sudden, there he is. Right? Remember, Thomas wasn't there. So Thomas said, whatever. He's not. Unless I put my fingers in the holes in his hand and my hand in the hole in his side, I will not believe. Right? But he just kind of came through the wall. When he shows up, what will you be doing? The walls and the door aren't going to stop him from showing up. Okay? Now, it kind of makes us go, ooh, what will I be doing? Doesn't it? I think that's the point. Look at the third parable. We've already had two of them. And now we're moving on to the third one in verse 41. You too be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour that you do not expect. That was 40, I apologize. 41. Peter said, Lord, are you addressing this parable to us or to everyone else as well? In other words, is this just for the disciples or is this for everybody in the world? Okay, now, interesting, he doesn't say yes or no. He doesn't say you guys or everybody, but we're going to get a parable that is going to show us whether it's just the disciples or everybody. Okay? This is where it's going to get kind of... We've gone from kind of positive parables to it's going to get a little bit negative. Okay? Look at what it says in verse 42. The Lord said, who then is the faithful and sensible steward whom his master put in charge of the servants to give them their rations at the proper time? Blessed is the slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all of his possessions. Now, look at some of the words. One of the words in verse 42 is the steward. The steward. Okay? We're still, in all of these parables, we're talking about the head of a household. And by head of the household, we don't mean the person who owns the house. But we're talking about Alfred, right? We're talking about the guy who's in charge of everything. This is Joseph in the Old Testament, whom Potiphar put in charge of everything. Now, does the steward own the house? No. He doesn't own the house. The steward just manages the house. Everything that the master owns has been given and entrusted to the steward. including the other service people. Okay? The other servants. And the master has made provision for the steward to provide to the servants. And look at the results in verse 43. If he does it well, if he takes care of those that are underneath him, if he takes care of the possessions that have been entrusted to him, he'll be blessed. You see that in verse 43. Same steward in verse 45, but a completely different attitude and response of the steward. He's going to, instead of being responsible with what God's given him, he's going to be irresponsible. And here's where it gets pretty negative. Look at verse 45. But if the slave says in his heart, my master will be a long time in coming, and he begins to beat the slaves, both men and women, and eat and drink and get drunk, the master of the slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, and an hour when he does not know him, and will cut him to pieces. Whoa, 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 Pastor Tim, whoa, whoa. Think about, what does it mean to be cut to pieces? We don't really do that today.
I don't think so.
You know, we don't even do electric chair anymore. No. Most states don't do lethal injection. In Jesus' day, if you were unfaithful with what the master had given you, what does it mean to be cut into pieces? That's pretty serious, isn't it? I hope you're not visualizing it too much. I hope maybe cartoon form, but not like real form. Okay. Now, what did this guy do? What did he do? He wasn't a good steward. He wasn't a good steward. He abused the people that God had placed underneath him. He got drunk. He was a glutton. He ate all the food. And look at his excuse. Excuse, hey, I can do whatever I want because my master, he's not going to be here anytime soon. He's a long time coming. I'm just going to enjoy myself. I'm going to do whatever I want to. But you know what? The master is coming. And you may get away with it for a while. Not you, the slave. But eventually he's going to show up and there will be an account. Okay, look at the rest of this verse in verse 46. He'll cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. Verse 47, and the slave who knew his master's will and did not get ready or act in accord with his will receive many lashes. But the one who did not know it and committed deeds worthy of flogging will receive but few. From everyone who has been given much, much will be required, and to whom they have entrusted much more of him, they will ask all the more. In other words, he's going to go a little bit deeper, not just cut to pieces. There's going to be floggings. There's going to be discipline. There is going to be consequences for the actions of the steward. Okay, now, a lot of times when we are in church, we don't really even use this word anymore, stewardship. Okay, but when we do use the word stewardship, we think like, oh, we're about to have a giving campaign so we can build a building or something. Okay, stewardship is certainly a money issue. Okay, you know, hopefully, that the money in your wallet, the money in your bank account is not yours. It doesn't belong to you. The money in my wallet, the money in my bank account does not belong to me. It belongs to God. My job as a steward is to manage God's money and to do with it what he wants me to do with it. Now, there are some major benefits to this. Okay? By the way, you can't get around it. You can't get around it. Even if you don't know him as Lord and Savior, you will still be held accountable for what you did with the things he's given you. Okay? You're still accountable as a husband for what you've done with your wife. If you're a husband, your job as a steward of your wife is to present her to God better than when you got her. If you're a wife and you have a husband, your job is to present him to God better than when you got him. If you're a parent, you have a responsibility to raise your children in a way that would be honoring to God. Okay? This is a pretty high calling, isn't it? It's a pretty high calling. In every area of our life, in everything we have, we need to be a steward of it for the glory of God. Okay? And there's consequences when we don't do what God calls us to do. There's lashes. Look at even in verse 48. Hey, look, if you knew about this and you didn't do it, you're going to get a bunch of them. If you're kind of ignorant to it, you're still going to get lashes. It's just not going to be as severe. Okay? Yeah, that kind of happens with parents and children, doesn't it? If they knew they weren't supposed to do something and they did it anyway, they get a little bit more discipline than if they were just idiots. Okay? By the way. That wasn't very nice, was it? But sometimes we just do things. I was working with teenagers. I worked with teenagers for a lot of years. And at one point I had a 200-pound junior in high school that like ran across the room and like jumped on this folding chair and it just went, just collapsed. And I went over to him and I said, "Why did you do that?" He's like, "Oh, I thought it'd be cool." I'm like, "You just ruined one of our chairs. That's not cool." He was like, "I thought I'd ollie it, you know, like on my skateboard." I'm like, yeah, I realized at that point he really had no idea what he was. He's like, "I don't know what I did. I don't know why I did that. It just thought, it seemed like a good thought." Like, okay, well, there's a reason your mom says look before you leap, right? Sometimes we need to think through what we're doing so we know what the consequences or benefits are going to be. Right? So sometimes people just do things and they don't even know why they do it. And God is saying there's still discipline for that. It's just not as severe. Okay? Now, this last one is interesting. Because it says, hey, if you've been given a lot will be required. But if you're faithful with what God has given you, you will be given more. You'll be entrusted more. Okay? Another part of Scripture says, hey, if you're faithful with the little things in life, then God's going to give you more of that. Right? Now, I want you to think about this. If you've ever been in charge of someone at work or something, if you've got someone who works for you, or you're a manager of them, and they're good at their job, what do? You give them bonus. More. You give them more. If they're not real good at it, you know, if every time you give them a job, they drop the ball, they get less. Right? Isn't it interesting that that's like a godly character? That's what God does for his people. When you're faithful with the little things, he's faithful and will give you more. When you're a good steward, he will give you more. Okay? Now, let me give you a little bit more example of what a steward is like. I want to give you some modern day examples of what a steward is like. And then I want to give you some practical stuff. And then I want to give you some church stuff. Okay? Let me give you some examples of stewardship. Think of like an asset manager. Let's say you got a 401k or something, and someone manages that asset. How would you feel if you had been giving to your 401k for years and years and years and years, and then you're getting ready to retire, and then all of a sudden you found out that your asset manager was Bernie Madoff, and it was completely gone? All that money that you had invested for years and years and prepared yourself to finally enjoy life and finally kind of kick back and relax, and all of it's gone. He stole it all. How would you feel about that guy? Not very good. Jesus is saying, look, you're a steward. How is God going to feel about you if you do that? How about like a property manager? Like you save and save and save, and you're finally able to afford a rental house or something like that. And after 20 years of saving and preparing and getting this, you turn that asset over to somebody. And what do they do with it? They burn it down. And then you find out they canceled the insurance. How would you feel about them? Whoa. Chop them into pieces, right? TJ, I tell you. How about your banker? You have a savings account. And your balance on your savings account says you got X amount of dollars in the bank and the savings. And you show up to get some of your money. And it's been spent. You wouldn't feel very good about that, would you? How about a lawyer? A lawyer trying to get you your rights, and you find out that the lawyer's working for the other guy? We have laws and rules against that, don't we?
Yeah, that's right.
Because they're a steward. They're a steward. How about a babysitter? Where you entrust your kids to somebody and you find out later that they weren't taking care of your kids and watching your kids, they were abusing your children. How would that make you feel? That's what Jesus is saying. You are a steward. And you and I will be held accountable for what we do with the things that God has given us. Okay, look, we teach our kids to be stewards of things, even though we don't call it that, before they go to bed. And when they wake up, we say, go brush your teeth. Why? Because we want our kids to be a steward of their teeth. We want them to take care of that. We are stewards of our bodies. We teach our kids, you got to go outside and play for a little while. You got to get a little bit of exercise. You got to eat the right foods. Okay, we're teaching them to be a steward of their body. We tell our kids, go do your chores, exercise, homework. I was thinking homework. Why? Because we want them to be a steward of their minds. We give them chores to teach them how to take care of the house, because we want them to take care of their house when they leave our house. We make them wear head pads and elbow pads and knee pads. It's called a helmet, I guess. When they ride their bike, because we want them to... See where I'm going?
Stay alive.
They got to wear safety glasses when they do something that may be, you know, you get something in your eye. Earplugs, all those. We teach our kids those things. To be a steward of themselves. Okay? And God is telling us through this passage, you are a steward. You are a steward of everything that I've given you. And I want to give you more. I'm a good father who gives good gifts. But until you're ready for more, until I can entrust you with more, I can't give you more. Right? You know, if someone's really bad with money and they have a little bit of money, they can make a little bit of mess out of their life. But if you give them a lot of money, it's not just a little mess of their life. It's a huge mess of their life, right?
Big boo-boo.
So be faithful with the little things. And God will increase that. Okay? Now, I want to apply this to our church. Jesus is coming. And he's coming back. We don't know when. If he comes a couple months from now, what will the church be doing? And so I want to give you, here's what normally happens when a pastor leaves a church. When a pastor leaves a church, the church gets kind of sad and they get kind of upset. And so what happens is they spend a number of months kind of in their grief. And then after a number of months, when attendance is going down and all these things are going down, then they say, well, we need to do something about this. I think that the best thing for the church to do in our present circumstance is to get busy right away. Because in 2 months, the Lord may return. What is he going to find the church doing in 2 months? Wallowing in misery? Or moving forward? Okay? I want to give you kind of three options in what the church can do for the future, and then I want to leave it to you to pray about. And I think that the Spirit that lives in me is the same Spirit that lives in you. And if he speaks to one of us, he's not going to tell one of us to do one thing and, you know, other people to do other things and all these different directions. I think the Spirit is going to, like Anita said, put us all on the same bus. Okay, and I think he's done that. So let me give you three options with the pros and cons, by the way. And then after that, we'll close in a word of prayer, and then we'll be dismissed, okay? Option number one, and by the way, I'm going to give you these on your way out. So if you, I'm going to give you all of these notes so you'll kind of know. I had a pastor that I worked for. His name was Pastor Gary Loeffler. And he taught me a good way to make a decision is to write down the pros on one side of a page and the cons on the other side of the page, and then you'll be able to make a more informed decision. Okay? So option number one is pretty traditional. You get an interim pastor, and then after you get an interim pastor, you hire a new pastor from outside of the church. Right? Most of the time in Hawaii, that means someone from the mainland. So you find someone, you do a pastoral search, you bring them over, and you have a new pastor. There's some major pros to that. A lot of times when you hire from outside of the church, you get someone with a lot of education, you get someone with a lot of experience. You usually hire someone who has a proven track record. In other words, they've done some of these things in the past. They're doing it as a professional. In other words, a lot, like for me, most of what I've done for the last almost 20 years has only been ministry. I get paid to do ministry, right? And then finally, there's more to ministry than just preaching. There's also member care, taking care of people and doing different things. And they would have an assignment for those type of things, okay? So those are the pros. Those are on the pros side. On the con side, I want to give you some of the cons as well. Our finances, as far as the church is concerned, dictates that your next pastor, like me, is going to be bivocational. In other words, you can't hire a full-time pastor to only do pastoral ministry. Finances just dictate that. Okay? We have a unique situation in Ocean View in that there's not a lot of jobs here in Ocean View. So someone who's in this position would have to drive somewhere, probably. And then finally, our finances also dictate you got probably one shot at this. Do you know it costs about $50,000 to bring a pastor to a church? By the time you interviewed, move their stuff, all of that kind of thing. This church, if they go this route, you got to get it right the first time. Because if they're here for 2 or 3 months and then leave, finances are going to say, we got to shut the door. Okay? And that brings me to my next point. You got to find someone who has the ability to stay in Ocean View. When I came here in year 6 of the church, I was the 7th pastor in 6 years. The longest tenure before me was 9 months long. Okay? That's not a long time. Okay? Some people see Hawaii and they go, I want to go to Hawaii. And they don't come to do ministry. They come because it's Hawaii. Right? The other problem, the other con that we have with this is that Ocean View can be a difficult place to live. Not only for the pastor, but for the pastor's wife and the pastor's family. I mean, we're living on catchment. There's a lack of infrastructure. Walmart and other stores are an hour and a half away. Okay? Even Amazon takes, 3 weeks. When there's a worldwide panic, you can't get your toilet paper quickly, okay? We deal with things like Vogue, volcanoes, earthquakes, things like that. And we live a long way from medical resources. So there's some positives and some pros to bring a pastor. There's also some cons to it. Okay, let me give you option number 2. Option number 2 is to hire from within the church. Okay, to hire from within the church. In other words, somebody who's already here. There's some major pros to that. First of all, they're known in the community. Okay, secondly, they have a track record for living in Ocean View. Okay, we've got a couple of guys that I think may be able to do this. One of them is Uncle Alan. Alan has been working on our leadership team for a long time. And the other one is Nate. Both of these have got a proven track record. Alan's not going. He's been here since like 1987, okay? Half of this group over here wasn't even born then. Okay? And then it's financially, sustainable to hire from within. Okay? The cons, there may be a lack of education. Okay? There may be a lack of experience. You don't have that proven track record, and doing ministry is very difficult. And it's hard when you're doing it for the first time, and it's also hard when there's not a lot of support. Okay? So that's option number 2. Option number 1 is to hire from without. Option number 2 is to hire from within. There's a third option that I can see. That third option is to unite with a sister church. I believe that Kona Baptist Church would be a great church for Ocean View to unite with. Okay, Kona Baptist Church is the planting church of Ocean View Baptist Church. They have a love for Ocean View. They want to see the church flourish in Ocean View. I have a friend that works there. He's the pastor of Kona Baptist Church. His name is Pastor Brian. And let me give you some of the pros and some of the cons. Okay? Here's the pros. Pastor Brian, or any future pastor of Kona Baptist Church, is going to have education. They're going to have experience. Pastor Brian has a proven track record. He actually has a training program, a discipleship program, that he's running with his leaders there. And he could take our leaders and make them a part of that training program so that we would have discipleship things. There's a spiritual maturity that goes along with this. He's already had a vision. This isn't like something he just came up with. And by the way, I want you to know, he didn't approach me. I talked to him and said this might be something that we'd be interested in. Okay? He has a vision for Kona Baptist Church to be a supporting churches for the churches that they've already planted. He told me that before he knew I was leaving. And finally, all that member care and all that kind of stuff is something that they could accomplish. Now, this is the way this would work if it was something that the church wanted to do. We would unite with Kona Baptist Church, and Ocean View Baptist Church would be a campus of Kona Baptist Church. Okay? Our members would become members of Kona Baptist Church. Our leaders would become leaders within the structure, Kona Baptist's structure. So like Alan and Nate would become elders of Kona Baptist Church. And their job would be to be in charge of the Ocean View campus. Okay? Again, we would become members. People would become members of Kona Baptist. The leaders would have both the support and the training. I just kind of went through all this. Another campus in Kona for activities and attendance. So if you were in Kona on Sunday, you'd have a place to go to church. They also do a lot of different activities and things that you could be a part of. Okay? The leaders at, again, our leaders would serve. It gives us the advantage of knowing the people that would be in charge here. It also, they have a track record and it's financially stable. And then finally, there'd be some administrative help from Kona Baptist. You know, Kona Baptist have a youth minister that's there. So Ocean View Baptist Church would get a youth minister. You know, that last Friday, Kona Baptist youth group meets on Friday nights. They had 28 kids. 20 of them came from Ocean View. Okay? So one of the things that might happen is Ocean View Baptist Church might actually grow if people from Kona Baptist Church knew that Ocean View was a part of what God is doing in Kona. Okay? Full-time secretary. They take care of finances. They take care of Facebook. There's a lot of pros. Okay? It's kind of like taking the other two and mashing them together. Okay? All the pros from both those columns. What's the con? Here's the rub, right? Here's the rub. The con is that the church would turn over its assets to Kona Baptist. To become a part of Kona, and by the way, this is not Brian talking, this is me talking. I think if you're going to do this, it's got to be a marriage. You can't say, Kona, we want you to mentor us, we want you to take care of us, we want you to do all this kind of stuff, but we're not bringing anything to the table. You know, when you get married, you take your assets, your job, and her job, and you get a joint checking account. And the two become one. Okay? The other con is there'd be a submission to an authority we don't know. Third con, it's change. And nobody likes change. But folks, we're going through change anyway. Okay? So let me just finish. I'll answer your question. Those are the three options. What we're going to do is I'm going to, on your way out, I'm going to give you my notes on these three options. I'm going to ask you to pray about this and ask which direction the Lord would lead Ocean View in. And maybe it's a fourth option that I haven't thought of. I don't know. But if we will open our hearts in prayer, I believe God will lead and direct us. Okay? My job, my last job as a pastor, is to look toward the future of Ocean View and to help you get to where we think God wants this church to go. Okay? To prepare. To be a good steward of what we have and to prepare for His coming. Because we don't want to be caught doing nothing when He shows up. Okay? Let's go to the Lord in a word of prayer.